And now we come to the lecture given at the evening of the 13th of April 1913 at Erfurt, E-R-F-U-R-T. And it was given there for the consecration of the Johannes Raphael branch. The lecture is entitled About the Inworking of the Dead into the World of the Living. Rudolf Steiner starts, and he says, it must be a great joy for us that we, out of the different places of our anthroposophical work, are able to find ourselves together in this city where, since a long time, individual single people of our friends have worked together in order to attempt to develop an anthroposophical life for the promotion of spiritual development under the relationships which are at times are subject to very conflicting relationships. And we can see that the fruit of all this work is this Johannes Raphael branch. If here we who come from the outside have come together with our Erfurt friends and are in a position of consecrating this branch, so are we permitted as an introduction to direct our soul with a few thoughts about the significance of the anthroposophical work of the present time, the significance of this anthroposophical work for mankind's development. My dear friends, what is the process by which there arises our anthroposophical branches? If you contemplate this question, so you discover that these anthroposophical branches arise, as it were, in a wonderful way, because they blossom here and there, as it were, like spiritual product, nature products. And those people who feel themselves called upon through their enthusiasm for the anthroposophical work, and feel themselves, because of their enthusiasm, have the impulse to establish such a branch, they stand there for their feelings, and through that which stands as occult forces behind these feelings of enthusiasm, the occult forces that stand behind these feelings, they stand there like a spiritual power. They feel that they must do something. Their enthusiasm has been stimulated by occult forces which stand behind their feelings and impels them to think they must do something. Through our external culture of our age, a branch is never established, but a branch is established from out of the hearts of those people who feel themselves called upon to establish a branch. In our present culture, there exists nothing which enters into the human being and, so to say, from the external impels him to work together in an anthroposophical way. Of course, the person who resolves to work together in an anthroposophical way, that person has to expect much other things through the demand of our striving. A person who decides to work together in an anthroposophical way has to expect other things other than convenience and recognition. There exists none of the usual streams and strivings of the present time, which seek to win souls for anthroposophy. And the person who is able to regard that which our anthroposophical movement is, that person will realize and will offer witness to the fact that anthroposophical movement does not proceed in a propagandic way, in an agitating way, to just agitate things for anthroposophy. Disregarding the fact that the external relationships do not promote the fact that the lecturers go somewhere else than the place from where they are called. Disregarding that, we ought to grasp the nature of the movement in such a way that we attempt to do everything in order to offer the possibility that people have something, receive something to hear. But they have to approach the anthroposophical work. Here's an example of the way the Teutons approach. They go round and round and say something in a very complicated way, but it's very simple. I'm trying to say to him, look here, we are not propagandists for anthroposophy. People have to come to us. We don't go to them. Okay, that's all. These Teutons enjoy going round and round and round the bloody mulberry bush. That's the way the Teutonic audiences love to be spoken to. They don't like the direct approach. The manuscript. When, therefore, you realize how propaganda is conducted, so you will see that with our particular stream, that has nothing to do with propaganda. And that's the way which every person should work who stands on the ground of a movement standing upon occultism. Of course, it should be left to the souls themselves to approach the spiritual movement. And then one sees, as far as this movement is concerned, that here and there anthroposophical branches blossom forth, because that which flows into the movement works further in the correct karmic consequence. And to the most, it shows itself that the branches are brought together in the existing movement. Value must be placed upon the fact that the branches do arise in spite of all the prejudices which dominate. There must be found enthusiastic, spirited souls which out of themselves stride forward to the establishing of such branches. I said so far, you could have said, my dear friends, I'm happy to be here, and we realize exactly that I'm very happy to find anthroposophical branches springing up all over. People brought together through their karma, in spite of the fact that we don't propagate and there are all resistances against it. That's all. That's the manuscript. Upon a great strong effectiveness, we cannot from the very beginning reckon. And those people who feel spirited for our work have to be prepared for horn and spot, for ridicule. They must become familiar with this ridicule, and also with the fact that work itself is very difficult, requires much renunciation. Nowhere else have we had anything else, any other type of experiences. We experience disappointment upon disappointment quite often. All over, we institute public lectures, but you get things don't work out very well. The bad results do occur if from the very beginning when we start, we get disappointments, and so we lose heart. However, if people become very patient and see that the first lecture may be visited by five people, and in spite of the fact that nobody comes to the second lecture, nevertheless, the work has to be continued. Nevertheless, when you continue, you do ultimately get result. However, we ought to make ourselves independent from visible results. So the situation is that our branches have to start working from very small numbers from the beginning. It gets misunderstanding upon misunderstanding. Nevertheless, these should be an education enabling us to discover what's the right way to do. In many times, we found quite a different echo. I'll give you an example. Once I was called into a city. I'm not going to give you the name of the city. I was called upon to give three times to give lectures. Now, what followed was no success. So this is what the people in the city said. Now it's enough. We ought to wait till the people come to us and require us to supply lectures. And I said to this person, if we did that, we'd have to wait for a long time. And we're still waiting today for that. I am very well conscious of the fact that it's quite appropriate for me to speak in thankfulness about our friends after they've worked so hard for a whole year. Those people who have come here will be able to participate in the thanks. The thoughts which have been directed here by our friends will work in a very strong way, and we will be able to progress further if we hold together in faithfulness. This support of souls for spiritual work is the main factor, and the more this support is given, the better will the work succeed. I might say that this Erfurter branch, through an external sign, has brought to expression the fact how inwardly it feels itself united with our way of working, with the way of working we're doing, and the whole mood of our working. And this feeling of being united will be an inner spiritual impulse for the success of the work. It is, in a certain way, something of a daring nature when one enters into the concrete particularities of the anthroposophical research. And in a certain way, I am permitted to designate as a success of our work that the living in of our friends into anthroposophy has led us. In single people, a feeling has arisen for the fact that one cannot just merely develop theories, but that work can lead to knowledge. One makes precisely on these domains the most remarkable discoveries. Curious that those people who stand outside, people who know nothing of anthroposophical work, those people begin to throw criticism about these concrete researches without having any inkling of the fact of how much spiritual work is necessary in order, for example, to be able to write such a book as the Spiritual Guidance of Man and Mankind. You get a great deal of criticism. For example, the question of the two Jesus boys are criticized. As far as they're concerned, they're quite happy if we restrict ourselves to general truths. However, when we go into particular special truths, then we're supposed to keep quiet. Begin to say such truths about the Jesus boys are so remarkable and special. But I'm not concerned with their criticism. It's much more valuable when our friends here in Erfurt feel themselves united when they hear these special factors. Of course, no other things are imparted than those who are perfectly sure that when we present these truths, they are a result of very strong testing. To such truths does it belong the fact that John the Baptist is the same soul as Raphael. Hence, from my feeling, it is a beautiful spiritual deed that you have decided to call this branch the John Raphael branch, thus bringing to expression the grasping of a spiritually researched truth. Now I know why Rudolf Steiner said many paragraphs ago previously that he talked about an external sign showing this Erfurt branch is well connected with the anthroposophical work. Before he mentioned the external sign, he had to go through all these things. This group has selected this external sign of this remarkable specific anthroposophical truth that John the Baptist is the same soul as Raphael, because of that, this concentration is also an intimate concentration. Through the fact that we attach ourselves to such an occult truth by giving your branch this name, through this we announce the fact that we are held together in faithfulness to those things which represent the most intimate to us. And then the words become something very deep, which are expressed by the carrier of the name as Novalis, which at the beginning of our consecration were resounding to our ears. Mantel speaking. Evidently, before he gave this consecration, they must have presented something from Novalis. I assume that must have been to explain his comment here. But that continues. We must seek the most important in the feelings and impressions which unite us. In no other thing could they arise other than on the basis of our knowledge. And we should not permit ourselves to become lax and convenient. The knowledge this knowledge must fire itself up to a feeling together. To our feeling, the knowledge must enlighten to a feeling. We can feel miteinander fühlen, feel together. If it corresponds to the intentions of our friends, when I do this consecration with several words, so I must say the following. To express these words, it is extremely satisfying. It is a consecration which corresponds to the hearts. Because of that, I am permitted to say that which you have begun be an impulse for you, and you will work under the protection of powers and forces of which we indeed know that these powers and forces invisibly hold sway among us, namely the masters of wisdom and the harmonization of impressions. And we have to conduct ourselves in love and faithfulness. What has been holding sway among you, we have enabled you to give the name of your branch to that which I have expressed, permit you expressed in this moment. Mentel speaking. I'd like to point out, he uses the expression die Meister der Weisheit und des Zusammenklangs der Empfindung. Translate, the masters of wisdom and the Zusammenklang, the harmonizing together. Zusammenklang, accord, consonance, harmony. The harmony of Empfindung, impressions, feelings, harmony of feelings. It's always, I don't understand that. Rudolf Steiner gives the group his consecration. I'll say it in German first, and then I'll give you the translation. Die schützenden Mächte, die über uns wachen und uns Impulse zu unserer Arbeit geben, von denen wir wissen, dass sie genannt werden die Meister der Weisheit und des Zusammenklangs der Empfindungen. Ich rufe die Schütze der Arbeit an, dass der Zweig recht gedeihen möge und ein Zentrum in dieser Stadt sein möge für das, was wir ersehnen als spirituellen Fortschritt. Now I'll give you the translation. The protective forces and powers which watch over us and give us the impulse to our work, those protective forces of which we know that they have to be designated and given the name of the masters of wisdom and the harmony of feelings. I call them to be the protectors of this work, that this branch might really prosper and become a center in this city for that which we yearn towards as spiritual progress. And after saying that, giving that consecration, Rudolf Steiner says, and with that, there's given the possibility for you to unite yourself to something. I spoke to the friends who were assembled in Weimar. Unite in a certain way, without it being necessary that each one of us must have heard it. Now Rudolf Steiner tells you what he's talking about. He says, we're dealing with the life between death and a new birth. I spoke about the fact that a person, after he leaves the physical plane, can have, in certain cases, difficulties of establishing connections with those who have been left behind upon the earth. The possibility that could occur that that person who passes through the portal of death knows about someone who he has left behind, knows that it's experienced something with this person he's left behind before he passed through the portal of death. In the consciousness of the dead, there lives that which he experienced in community with others upon the earth. But quite often, such a connection cannot be re-established if the people who have been left behind develop such thoughts which are not of a spiritual nature. If somebody has been left behind upon the earth, and this somebody who is a person who seldom fills his soul with spiritual thoughts, such a person is someone to whom the dead soul can have no access. This connects itself to the way in which the living can be brought in unity with the dead. A certain direction of research gave me the remarkable conclusion about the interaction with the dead. In the first place, it could appear to be very amazing that John the Baptist, whose soul was thoroughly permeated by will impulses of a prophetic nature, such a soul as John the Baptist could then reappear as the soul of Raphael. Many things appear to be remarkable in spiritual research, which appears so dangerous because it is so illuminating. If you then approach the things more closely, so it works in a very shattering way upon the soul when you see that very many things are different from what you could imagine. For those people who receive such a fact as we have mentioned, namely, who believe the truth of the fact that you have an identity of John and Raphael, it is important that he maintains correctly a feeling of Verwunderung, astonishment, surprise, amazement. I assure you, who are not able to research such facts, that something like that comes to appearance when you don't look for it. Unsearched for such things, you arrive at such things. It won't help you very much just merely to contemplate such things. To the most degree, it helps to be able to wait in a restful way until the intuition comes to you. And then it is good when one, in a certain way, can be amazed at what results from this waiting restfulness. The straightway of the intellect is not adapted for occult research. And this amazement or astonishment leads to the fact that one gradually recognizes that this amazing thing shows itself as being understandable. So it showed itself to me one day that with Raphael, who in a very astonishing way did his painting, something else continued to work in his soul. And I could discover that which continued to work in his soul was nothing other than that which proceeded from his father. Raphael's father died when Raphael was 10 years old. The father of Raphael would perhaps have been able to live longer. I mean that naturally as a hypothesis. He would have had the forces to live longer. Instead of that, these forces which would have enabled him to live longer, he carried over into the spiritual world. And under circumstances, these forces could work over from the spiritual world in a powerful way. This father was really not a great painter, but he was inwardly a painter. He lived in painting ideas which he could not realize as long as he lived in a physical body. And so out of the spiritual world, he sent forces to his son. And because this son received these forces, this young Raphael could become such a great painter. Raphael had acquired the painting capacity from that which was sent to him from his father, from out of the spiritual world. Now, when we're saying that, we are not minimizing Raphael. Only we are trying to show how forces can work down into the physical world, out of the spiritual world. Lessing made a remarkable expression. He said, Raphael would also have become a great painter, even if he were born without hands. The forces which were in John the Baptist were transformed into the painter Raphael. If we are able to acquire knowledge of the working in of the spiritual world into the physical world, then life will be able to be, would be brought progressing much further. For a long time, I've exercised a teaching activity, a pedagogical activity. It was my task to instruct children who lost their father. If one educates in a conscientious way, so one must take into consideration all the relationships. One there must ask, what are the capacities which work in the environment, and so on. I had attempted to keep in mind everything which externally could be kept in mind. However, there remained one difficulty. Then I said to myself, the father has died, and he had definite intentions for his children. Then, as I took into consideration the willing of the father, then things began to progress much better. The will forces of the father were present. That's what you see when the dead again work into the domain of the living. Nevertheless, you should realize that the dead are not able to know what those people whom they've left behind, what is done by those people who are left behind upon the earth, as was said this morning. See, I gather this is an evening lecture, and in the morning he gave another morning lecture. It continues. If one has passed through the portal of death, and he knows that his impulses work into the physical world, so it can be a pain for him that he can perceive nothing of those people whom he has left behind. The dead can feel an inner feeling of discomfort when he cannot know what there is happening below. However, this feeling can be eliminated if we send him food and nutrition. We must, as living people, arrange the occasion to enable the dead to perceive us. Now, take into consideration the fact that we indeed, through a thought, can easily be able to stimulate spiritual life in our soul. It is already an important positive thought when we know that the dead is there, that the dead is capable of being reached by us when he passes through the portal of death. Because that is such a thought that can never be produced by what comes in occupying with the sense physical world. In our soul life, we should clearly carry the conviction, namely, the dead continues to live. This thought, which we carry in our mind, that can be able to catalyze spiritual life in our soul. The thought itself can do it. Now you must realize that in such periods of time, when there did not exist things of a confusing and distorting way, in those times it was precisely not necessary that anthroposophy should exist. However, times change during the course of mankind's development. Whereas it is not quite a long time past that every soul, even people, were occupied with those accustomed sciences, nevertheless, it's not so long ago that people could be convinced of the life of those who have died. However, today, people are beirnt, confused, misled, diverted. Alone are those people confused and diverted who doubt that the dead are present, but also there are diverted and confused other souls. And that's the reason why anthroposophy must come into the world. We know that the dead live. That which we hide, carry in the depths of our soul, that is the important thing. And of that, quite often, we haven't any inkling. We all stand within a mechanistic period, which has given us railways, ships, telegraph, and other inventions. What, for example, does it mean to travel in an electric train in contrast to that which the fact that previously one could not travel in an electrical train? That means that we are now surrounded by a purely mechanical configuration that produces an imagination. Nevertheless, this imagination can remain unconscious. But this imagination is there, and it works in the soul in such a way as to rob the soul of the belief of the life of the soul after death. This life is torn out with all its roots. The times of the old stagecoach, mail coach, this belief in the survival of the dead, the dead continue to live after death, that could still exist. But in contradiction today with today's means of communication, in order to foster the belief in the survival after death, we need greater, stronger forces. I would like perhaps now to proceed and tell you about something of which I've often told you. Many people want to hold back the anthroposophical movement. When the first railway was to be built, one asked the medicine college what the project would do in influencing the health of travelers. Then these physicians gave great severe doubts against the idea of having a railway. Said it's best not to have a railway built. However, if you want to build this railway, then what you have to do is to erect high walls on both sides of the railway. Otherwise, those passengers in the railway would have a shattering of their brain by being exposed to quickly changing pictures. I have a comment here. Rudolf Steiner, when he told the story about this somewhere else. He didn't say this is the reason why they built the walls. He said that they built the walls to protect people who lived outside on the other either side of the walls from nerve damage. It's interesting how he changed, how he gave a different reason why the doctor said don't put, don't construct a railway. But if you do construct a railway, put big walls on either side. We all know railways were constructed, they didn't build these walls, and no damage was done. These people couldn't hold back the building of railways, neither could they hold back the development of the anthroposophical movement. I didn't tell you this story in order to make fun of the medical people. All I wanted to emphasize the fact that one can't hold back the progress of something which should progress forward. That will take its way in spite of its enemies. Actually, the railway has made people more nervous, and mankind has been changed by means of the railways. The whole configuration of the soul life has become something different. We can say there was something in the at the basis of these medical opinions. But the progress of Earth evolution is so that things must come in the way they have come. Anthroposophy will not be pushed back. However, it will be clear. The belief against the ancient stagecoach could come, but not against the railway. I don't know what he means by that. I'll try that sentence again. Anthroposophy would not want to turn back anything, but it will be clear that the belief against the ancient stagecoach could come up, but not against the railway. Well, there it is. Continue. Rossardi continues. Anthroposophy works in the unconscious, and the belief in the spiritual world will become an important factor for the further development of mankind. In the widest circles, the belief in the spiritual world is no longer valid. Because of that, the basis, the fundamentals must be led into the field, those fundamentals which flow out from anthroposophy. When we consider this, then we will find that in ancient times, human beings had spiritual inclinations to the dead. They could give the dead a sufficient amount of force. Today, spiritual knowledge is necessary. And there we see that the spiritual thought about the continuing to live of the soul must be fired up through knowledge. We are able to say the following: because our time has taken a certain form, was it necessary to permit anthroposophy to flow into this period? And this stream will again make it possible that the living will be able to feel united with the dead. A person who is left behind does not have to remain without comfort, because he who remains behind can become a helper of those who have died. However, those who have died could also become helpers. Many people here know what they can thank the dead for. In relationship to spiritual knowledge, we can thank the dead for very much. And this experience was, for example, to me always something of extreme importance, that dead, particularly those who were died prematurely became helpers. This connection, it doesn't always concern itself that the person who has passed through the portal of death would have to be a person who, when he was here upon the earth, was especially intellectual in order to be able to want to help the living. Quite often, young children die, and nevertheless, they are quite often advanced souls in the spiritual world, and they can tell us a great deal. The person who considers the thing only from an intellectual aspect, he will not be able to penetrate into such mysteries. I previously told you the dead can show us this and that thing. Now, how does this arise? I'll give you an example for it. Earlier on, previously, I've often told you how things are relate themselves with Raphael's picture entitled The School of Athens. Usually, both of the middle figures were considered to be Plato and Aristotle. Now, that's a false representation. And that person who occupies himself with this picture, according to the way of the Baedeker, who says these single figures represent this or that personality, that person will not be able to read very much out of the significant picture. The one figure actually is Paul, who appears in Athens among the philosophers. A great deal was clear to me when, in connection with the Akasha Chronicle, I followed back what had led Raphael to create this picture. I had, through other researches, acquired the conviction of how the Gospels arose. But that is not connected with the School of Athens. The writer of the Gospels had occasionally there with dates established according to the stars. Thus, they pursued astrology. This is a fact for itself, and in the first place has not any connection with Raphael's picture. Now, I had the good fortune or the grace, so far as a relatively early died soul brought to my attention the connection between the right side of the picture and the left side of the picture. And it was told to me that the words out of the Luke Gospel had originally appeared on the picture, later on were painted over, and words out of the Pythagorean school had been written over it. Now one is able to understand also the gesture were pointed to above to the astronomy with the circle, and I could establish the fact that Raphael on the right wanted to show the star research. That which was there cognized was written upon the other side. Thus, out of the astronomy was the gospel written. I told you this because it was important for me to bring to your attention the fact as to how the connection is between the living and the dead. That person who, when he passes the portal of death, undertakes something like that, can confront the spiritual events in the same way in which a child confronts the world of nature. The child looks upon the world of nature, but he does not understand the world of nature. However, in spite of that, out of an intuition, the most wonderful things can be imparted. That which one develops with intellectual thoughts, that does not arrive at the dead. That doesn't come to the dead. Living must stand at the disposal of the dead. The dead must be able to turn himself to the thoughts of the living. And what he experiences must be perceived, seen, out of the mirror of the thoughts of the living in him. The dead person is able to look at the living person who mirrors the thoughts. This comes from the realm of the living. Anthroposophy would never exist in the world if human beings had not acquired it upon the earth. Hence it is true that initiates who work upon the earth have in their soul the thoughts in this bypath, in this Umwege, in this detour, that the dead are able to take in these thoughts. It cannot be said to what purpose we want to read to the dead, since there the dead live in the world of which we make thoughts. Children also live in the world of which we are speaking. Children upon the earth do not have that which science brings. However, anthroposophy can take it up in the spiritual world. Nevertheless, this anthroposophy can be achieved by the dead only from the earth. I hope that we understand ourselves in this connection. It shows itself, in fact, that the person who confronts us as a dead person experiences something in his soul like a yearning. However, he does not know upon what this yearning is focused. One comes in connection with him, and through that one is led that one comes in connection with him. So one can, in all relationships, work with the dead. If one stands in spiritual wisdom, so this spiritual wisdom is radiated through with light, and the dead can perceive the light. However, if the soul takes up into itself no spiritual wisdom, so the soul remains dark, and the dead are not able to perceive the soul. In order that the dead can be able to live with us, that depends upon what it is which we can bring towards them. That is the other side of that which we want to speak about tomorrow. We bring that into existence which offers the dead an inner satisfaction, and that will factually be the most beautiful fruit of anthroposophical living and working, that one not only has a kind of faith in the life of the dead, but that one continuously has a working, a soul working, which attracts the dead. And this will be more and more necessary for the cultural development. Man will be all the less connected with that of what remains with him of the life between death and a new birth, the less he fills himself with spiritual wisdom. I'm going to say this sentence positively. I'm going to reverse it in the way I'll say it, not the way Rudolf Steiner says it. I would say it this way: man will be all the more connected with the life between death and a new birth insofar as he more and more fills himself with spiritual wisdom. Man, so for the life of me, I cannot see why Rudolf Steiner always prefers the negative presentation. Time and time again we come across this not business. He said again in the next sentence, he says, in the physical world, the souls will become more and more poor and more cold if they do not turn themselves to the spiritual life. He prefers that instead of saying that souls become richer and richer, become warmer and warmer when they turn themselves to the spiritual life. Strange, isn't it? Oh, he says it positively. They will become more inward only through the interaction with the spiritual world. There's one thought which will permit to live in a strengthening way in our soul, that our working does not need to be abgeschlossen, to be cut off when we pass through the portal of death. Does not have to be abgeschlossen, doesn't have to be terminated for the progress of culture. That we will rather more be able to work down if one below will take up our working. If the spiritual world would be accessible to us without man having to activate himself, so man would become lessig, indolent, lazy. Man has to do something to it. And this precisely is a proof for the fundamental truth which flows to us out of Anthroposophy. Mansell speaking, I can't see how it's a proof for the fundamental truth of Anthroposophy that man has to do something about it. Man has to activate himself. He means that Anthroposophy, when it's presented, has to require activity on the part of the hearer. Then it makes sense to me. I'd like to add what the publisher says at the back. At the back he makes a notice that in certain parts of it, the Nachschrift, the shift is mangelhaft. It lacks something. There are empty spaces somewhere. Shift is inadequate. Notice, Novalis, whose actual name was Friedrich von Hardenberg, 1772 to 1801. And he makes a note, the poem of Novalis before the lecture began was recited, and the poem was Wenn alle untreu werden, if everyone becomes untrue. And when Rudolf Steiner talks about an educating activity at a family, he refers to the family of Eunice, E-U-N-I-C. That's the lady he married. The publisher reminds us that Plato is 427 to 347 BC, Aristotle 384 to 322 BC. He ends the tape.